Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, September 4th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi. Here are our top stories this evening. A Chiredzi magistrate orders Police Commissioner General Augustine Chiwuri and Home Affairs Minister Ignatius Chombo to compensate a Chingwizi villager for wrongful arrest.
He stressed that no one was above the law and the rule of law is too operational in the country. The judgment he gave should be a deterrent to other would-be offenders.
Some Zimbabweans commend MDC founding president and former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai for calling for mass action over the worsening economic situation in the country, while ZANU-PF activists believe that this is the wrong way of tackling the issue.
Peaceful demonstrations are only allowed in the constitution. Practically, they are not. If you do it, you get arrested or you shot. So I really sympathize with Tsvangirai. I know the country is going down the drain, but there is nothing you can do.
And ordinary Zimbabweans are surprised by the number of people from the white and colored communities now begging on the streets. These stories and much, much more coming up. Stay tuned. A Chiredzi magistrate has ordered Police Commissioner General Augustine Chiwuri and Home Affairs Minister Ignatius Chombo to compensate a Chingwizi villager for wrongful arrest, pain and suffering as a result. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi has more details.
Chiredzi magistrate Tafadzwa Mhlanga today ordered the Police Commissioner General and the Home Affairs Minister to pay $550 in compensation to Zulu Jinya for wrongful arrest and pain suffered during his arrest last year. During the hearing of the matter, the court heard that Jinya was severely assaulted by cops while in police custody. One of Jinya's lawyers, Pegitava Gadza of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, told Studio 7 over the phone from Chiredzi that the legal team welcomed the court's ruling.
A landmark ruling was given. The case went through the trial process and today a ruling was delivered wherein he was given judgment for assault and wrongful arrest.
The attorney said the magistrate was unequivocal in condemning the police practice of assaulting suspects during detention, saying it was unlawful for the police to physically punish suspects.
He stressed that no one was above the law and the rule of law is too operational in the country. The judgment he gave should be a deterrent to other would-be offenders.
Tavagadza said several Chingwizi villagers' cases of public violence are still before the courts.
29 villagers were initially brought before the courts for public violence and were found not guilty, went before the civil courts claiming for damages for wrongful arrest and assault during arrest.
The Chingwizi villagers' lawyer told Studio 7 that several people continue to live in squalid conditions ahead of the rainy season, adding that they do not know what is awaiting them.
Their situation is really bad indeed, and it is inhuman and degrading. They are still in temporary shelters, which we cannot really call shelters, because the tents that were given to them by humanitarian organizations have now worn out, and they cannot even farm. The place is very dry and is not suitable for human habitation.
About 3,500 families were left without shelter and food after their homes were swept away by floods that occurred at Tokwe Mukosi Dam in Masvingo, while many children were left with no access to education. The government forcibly moved most of the flood victims to Nwanetsi Range, where they are said to be struggling to survive. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
About 5,000 Bulawayo residents today staged a demonstration against plans by the City Council to introduce prepaid water meters. The placard-waving residents marched through the city and rallied at Stanley Square in Makokoba high-density suburb. Organizers of the march included the Bulawayo Progressive Residents Association, Avameli Human Rights Lawyers and Habakuk Trust, among others. Speakers lashed at the council plans, saying the water meters were detrimental for residents. Officials from the Chitungwiza Residents Trust, Masvingo United Residents Association, among others, also delivered solidarity speeches. Reporter Ntungamili Nkomo spoke with one of the march leaders, Meli Dube.
What these thousands of people of Bulawayo were saying is that we now have information, we've been given information by civil society organizations. We now know that the Council of Bulawayo has come up with a policy that will injure us, that will hurt us. And they are saying no to that program, no to that water management, no to privatization of water. So they marched in their numbers. Elderly people, we had elderly people, we had young people, we had disabled people, we had all people from all walks of life meeting there at Stanley Square and spending the whole afternoon saying out loud that they don't want prepaid water meters in Bulawayo.
But what impact do you think you are making?
We are definitely sure that we have done our part and we will continue to do our part. Our part is to organize people. Our part is to give people the truth, to tell people the truth. And the people of Bulawayo have said that they will stand against any attempt to subvert their will, any attempt to ignore their voices in policy making. So they've said that they are the ones who are going to stop their council that they elected, their people that they pay via rates and other payments that they make, who have made this policy without them. So we are organizing people and we will not rest to do our job. And the people in Bulawayo have said they will not rest until the council climbs down and resigns its policy.
Meli Dube is one of the people who led today's anti-prepaid water meters in Bulawayo today. Some Zimbabweans have commended MDC founding president and former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai for calling for mass action over the worsening economic situation in the country, while ZANU-PF activists believe that this is the wrong way of tackling the issue. Tsvangirai's backers include most civic society activists, opposition parties and some struggling Zimbabweans who say the ruling party does not have a clue as to how it can take the country out of the economic mess it finds itself in. For perspective, Studio 7's Gibbs Dube reached human rights activist Clement Moyo and ZANU-PF Central Committee member David Ndlovu. Ndlovu says the government will not allow people to engage in street protests.
Peaceful demonstrations are only allowed in the constitution. Practically, they are not. If you do it, you get arrested or you'll be shot. So I really sympathize with Tsvangirai. I know the country is going down the drain, but there's nothing you can do. You simply can watch.
Mr. Ndlovu?
I've seen this happening in Britain. I've seen this is happening in America, where people just move around. Demonstrations, you see, attract even thugs. We take that chance to do certain things. That's why I come and say people should apply for to hold demonstrations. That's why we have had demonstrations which have been allowed in this country.
Demonstrations by ZANU-PF members are allowed, not any other member.
There you are, Mr. Ndlovu.
The last demonstrations were not held by ZANU-PF. They held by the opposition parties where they were demonstrating. I saw them actually demonstrating in Bulawayo.
So, Mr. Moyo, people can call for general mass protests, but at the end of the day, what is the fear all about?
Fear is you want to alert people. You know when there is dictatorship, people don't want the truth to be known. So if you are trying to alert people, you then become an enemy or a sellout. But then the country is totally finished now economically. There is not even politics practice in Zimbabwe. Lots of the cabinet ministers, the judicial system is questionable. Its dealings are bad. So you don't even know what to do now. Even they, ZANU-PF themselves, have no answer anymore besides squandering what is left of the country.
There you are, Mr. Ndlovu. Your quick response?
If, let's say, suppose everybody else, we all agree, everybody demonstrates tomorrow. Tomorrow is Saturday. What happens then? Will things change? Things can only change when this dialogue by Zimbabwe within Zimbabwe. And I say that Tsvangirai was prime minister. I'm yet to see his plans, which he put when he was head of government.
Mr. Moya?
People should really thank Tsvangirai for compromising to save Zimbabwe, bring it in a more safe economic state than what it was. But then he was abused during that period. He was abused. A lot of things that were agreed were not done. He still continued and went on to the election. People were saying, don't go to the election. He said, no, but why shouldn't I? Let me try. Now, look at where we are. MS, it's obvious ZANU can't do it. If they can't do it, they can't even surrender power. What then is the aim? Nobody knows anymore.
So can ZANU-PF, Mr. Ndlovu, fix this kind of a problem?
I'm sure Zimbabweans can sit down and discuss and resolve our problems as Zimbabweans without involving other peoples, other nations.
So what do you mean there?
What I'm saying
is because that has been done before, it has failed. This is where we are being caught up that, no, don't involve other people, you're becoming a sellout. Yet they cannot negotiate themselves. They don't want to negotiate a fair deal that will make this country liberated again.
That was human rights activist Clement Moyo speaking with Studio 7. You also heard the views of David Ndlovu, a ZANU-PF Central Committee member, speaking with Gibbs Dube from Studio 7. The government says it will next week resume its head count of teachers and pupils in schools, starting with Harare province on Tuesday in the Mbare Hatfield district. A memo to all school heads from the Education Ministry advises parents and teachers that Public Service Commission officials will be visiting schools for the exercise. But the call has incurred the wrath of the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, PTUZ, which accuses the government of targeting teachers as it seeks to root out ghost workers out of the system. More than 3,000 teachers were struck off the payroll recently when they were not at the workstations during the audit. PTUZ General Secretary Raymond Majongwe tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri teachers feel victimized.
We are utterly disgusted, we are utterly disappointed, and we are simply saying to government and the commission, these are people who are just doing witch hunting. They want to pull cotton over our ass and tell us that they are doing work where they are doing nothing. We have no apology. Firstly, we are convinced that government just wants to find an excuse to get from IMF and at the end of the day dismiss the same civil servants. But they came out and stood on top of the hills and said, no civil servant will be dismissed.
Are you going to cooperate?
Apparently, we are sending a very clear message. What cooperation do they expect from us? We have a government that is so big-headed, a commission is so naive, that they think that going out on this exercise will make sure that they reduce the money spent on salaries. They've come out and they've said they want to reduce the wage bill from 80% to 40%. But is this the way that they are doing it? We know of ministries, the Minister of Youth, the Minister of Agriculture, the Minister of Gender, where people who are working there are doing nothing, but they are not going to those ministries.
That was PTUZ's General Secretary Raymond Majongwe in Harare speaking with reporter Jonga Kandemiri. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has today appointed Ms. Fadzai Gwaradzimba of Zimbabwe as Assistant Secretary General for Safety and Security at the UN. Ms. Gwaradzimba, according to a statement from the UN, has over 25 years of experience with the United Nations system and most recently held the position of Deputy Assistant Administrator and Deputy Director Beru of External Relations and Advocacy for the United Nations Development Programme, UNDP, in New York. She began her career with UNDP in Somalia in 1989 and held various positions with UNDP in New York as Programme Manager and Senior Evaluation Advisor. Ms. Gwaradzimba holds a PhD in International Relations from the Johns Hopkins University, a master's degree in public affairs and international studies from the University of Oregon, a diploma in economics from the University of Colorado, and a Bachelor of Political Science and Public Administration from the University of Zimbabwe. She was born in 1953 and is married with one daughter. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, and we are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on the 4930-5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies. Now we take a look at regional and international news. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees has called on the European Union to admit up to 200,000 refugees for a mass relocation program to ease the flood of migrants appearing at EU borders looking for shelter. A hospital in the southern US state of Texas was not prepared last year to treat the first person diagnosed with the Ebola virus in the US, nor ensure the safety of the two nurses who contracted the virus while treating the patient, according to a report conducted by an independent panel of experts. Thai police say a man arrested earlier this week near the country's border with Cambodia did not likely carry out the bombing at a Bangkok shrine that killed 20 people. There are some things that the majority black Zimbabweans had never seen before, but the worsening of the country's economic crisis, Zimbabweans are getting accustomed to seeing members of the white community in particular and other minorities now begging on the streets of Harare, especially, or doing menial hospitals and even seeking treatment in public hospitals. It is really a sign of the time, as Ivan Chifera reports from the capital.
It's not surprising these days to see white or colored beggars on the streets of Harare and other cities across the country. A survey by Studio 7 revealed some of these new beggars used to stay in the city's leafy, affluent suburbs and have been forced to move to high-density residential areas usually reserved for the urban poor working class. They also now use public hospitals to seek medical attention. They even frequent run-down pubs in the sprawling high-density areas, places you would have never dreamt to meet a white Zimbabwean, say 10 years ago, before the ZANU-PF government confiscated commercial farms and parceled land out to blacks. Non-black communities, a number of those interviewed by Studio 7, had for a long time been shielded by their classes and spared the economic hardships faced by the majority of the people in Zimbabwe. One such person is Kenny Rowan, who used to work as a grader operator for the Mashingo City Council. Rowan, who is colored and stays in Mucheka high-density suburb, said it is wrong to believe that only blacks are affected by the prevailing harsh economic conditions. He adds, though most of his kith and kin stay in more affluent suburbs, they are also suffering just like him and the majority poor Zimbabweans.
They are poor. All of them are poor. No one is rich. All they are poor. Only surviving on little whatever they get. But they are poor. No one is rich.
He says the situation is so bad that even some assistance from well-wishers is unable to sustain him and his family.
We are poor. We got nothing. I'm a pensioner. But we got no money. So far, we are suffering.
He appealed to donors and well-wishers not to exclude non-blacks whenever they give out food handouts and clothes, saying non-white communities are equally affected by the economic crisis in the country. The government and non-governmental organizations, he says, normally do not provide social assistance programs for non-black communities because they are generally considered to be well-off people who can sustain themselves, an assumption, Rowan says, is not true. A white man who moves around selling samosas and pies in Mashingo wonders why people are surprised to see him on the streets selling his wares, adding his plight is not different from any other ordinary black Zimbabweans. The man who refused to be named said he lost his job years back and selling on the streets was the only option he had to keep his family fed. He said his little business was doing well, adding he had managed to buy a small car, which he sometimes uses as a pirate tax when he's not on the streets selling pies and samosas. John Kesten from Runde says he is willing to help those in the non-black communities who are struggling so they can pick up their lives and return to their former good old days.
At the moment, not looking after anybody, but I mean, we just assist where we can. If we see someone needs assistance, we will assist.
He adds he will not only assist his own kith and kin, but every Zimbabwean who is in need if he can, adding he believes government's economic blueprint, Zim Asset, can help the economy recover if implemented well.
Zim Asset, well, it's a good thing. We're looking forward to it. Anywhere I can contribute with Killer?
Some former white commercial farmers who lost their farms during the Fast Track Land Reform Program that started in 2000 have moved into towns and cities where many are evidently struggling to make ends meet. But do not be fooled to think Zimbabwe no longer has an affluent white community. A visit to affluent places in Borodel, Semlev's village and others do prove otherwise. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The recent killing of Cecil, the Zimbabwean famous lion, has sparked a flurry of Chinese aid to protect wildlife in the country. Sebastian Mofu has more from Harare.
Those are Zimbabwean officials, including Wildlife and Environment Minister Opamuchinguri, clapping after they received anti-poaching equipment worth $100,000 from a group calling itself the Sino-Zim Wildlife Foundation Association.
I want to thank our Chinese friends who has chipped in to give us a smile. So thank you so much for your support. And this is just a beginning of a journey.
A patrol vehicle and uniforms for anti-poaching officials were among the donated items. Here is the group's founder, Lee Song, explaining the reason for assistance.
Even in Zimbabwe, a paradise of wildlife, lots of wildlife are facing serious challenges from poaching for trophies by syndicates or for meat by villagers. The pressure of the poaching is being piled onto the authority at a time it has inadequate resources to support its wildlife conservation. The Sino-Zim Wildlife Foundation, therefore, is aiming at coordinating efforts of the Chinese public and private communities to mobilize resources and support for wildlife conservation in Zimbabwe.
The Chinese government has donated an additional $2.3 million to advance conservation efforts. The Zimbabwean Conservation Task Force has previously accused China of decimating the country's wildlife. The independent conservation group has complained about baby elephants being taken to zoos in China. China is known to be a major destination for illegally poached ivory and other wildlife products. But conservationists hope a shift is underway. China declared a one-year ban on ivory imports earlier this year. The country has also pledged to phase out its domestic ivory industry. The support follows the killing of what men considered an iconic Zimbabwean lion named Cecil in July. The lion was killed by an American dentist outside a protected reserve in Zimbabwe, sparking fury all over the world. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will lead discussions about the call yesterday for mass action by MDC leader Morgan Tsvangirai. To join the discussion, text us at 001-202-465-0318 so we can call you right back from our studios. And in sports news, Zimbabwe football fans are looking for nothing short of victory when their team trots onto Rufaro Stadium Sunday for their 2017 Africa Cup of Nations qualifier against Guinea. Reporter Michael Cariati gives us the mood in the country as the match fast approaches.
From Zambezi to Limpopo, the Zimbabwe football family, which has a very short memory, is already talking about celebration after Sunday's Africa Cup of Nations qualifier against the Sili National. The football family is satisfied and happy with Calisto Pasua's choice of players, and come Sunday, they believe they will celebrate. Warriors supporter Isaac Maia believes Pasua has assembled the best players available and says he has no doubt that the Warriors will come out victors at the end of the 90 minutes of play.
Our players, they are good players. We are very proud of them and we are very certain our players are going to succeed in this match.
Pasua has assembled what on paper is the best Zimbabwean squad available. He has called most of Zimbabwe's top players based outside the country, among them Knowledge Msona, Kama Billiard, Matthew Rusike, Nyasha Mushekwi, Costa Namuenesu, Cuthbert Malajila, and Captain Willard Katsande. Pasua himself says the Warriors have home advantage and should win the match. He, however, has warned these players to guard against complacency.
We're playing at home. We need to do better. And complacency mustn't creep. Remember, we won in Malawi. If we can win in Malawi, we can also be beaten here in Zimbabwe if we go thinking that it's going to be easy.
The coach says he will employ an all-out attacking system, but will not leave gaps for the Sili National to capitalize on.
We might say we need to attack with 4, 5, 6 guys going offensively. Then we'll have 4 balancing. We can say maybe we want the fullbacks to go and having those 2 defenders, defensive midfielders being on the central position and the 2 central defenders at the back.
However, football fan Mayor Makunike said the Warriors should not fool themselves by underestimating the West Africans. He says the game will not be easy, adding that the Warriors will have to fight hard to get a good result.
Zimbabwe, we have to fight hard. We have to fight hard to win.
The Zimbabwean Football Association have seen reason in having a big crowd at the stadium to cheer the Warriors. They have not increased gate charges, and the cheapest seat will be going for $3. The most expensive seat is the VIP stand, which this time around is going for $10 instead of $20. A win for the Warriors will propel them to the top of the group, depending on the results of the other group match between Malawi and Swaziland. At the moment, the Warriors share top spot in the group with Swaziland. The two teams have 3 points each, while Guinea and Malawi are sitting on 0 points. Meanwhile, the Zimbabwean team left for the 2015 Africa Games in batches due to financial constraints. Those who are competing early are already in the Congo Brazzaville, while those to compete later will join the rest of the squad when their time of competition comes. Zimbabwe's biggest major hope swimmer Kirsty Coventry is not yet in the Congo. The Africa Games, which will run until September 19, are in their 50th year of existence and have returned to their home of birth in Congo, Brazzaville. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Thanks, Michael. Now to recap today's top stories. A Chiredzi magistrate orders Police Commissioner General Augustine Chihuri and Home Affairs Minister Ignatius Chombo to compensate a Chingwizi villager for wrongful arrest. Hundreds of Bulawayo residents took to the streets today protesting the local authorities' intentions to introduce prepaid water meters in the city of Kings. And ordinary Zimbabweans are surprised by the number of people from white and colored communities now begging on the streets. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntunga Milinkomo. This is Chris Gande in Washington, wishing you a pleasant evening, a very good night, and a wonderful weekend.